welcome to the Everything EV podcast for me, Richard Alvin. And over the next few weeks, I'm going to be speaking to some of the leading lights in the electric vehicle space. And I'm very pleased to be joined today by Asif Ghafoor, CEO of the National EV Charging Network, B.EV. Hi, Asif.
Hi, Richard.
Asif, could you start by just saying us a little bit about who and what B.EV actually is?
So we're a charge point operator. We're operating across the whole of the UK. We started our life in Manchester. So we run a network for Transport for Greater Manchester, but we've then expanded across to the rest of the UK, funded by Octopus Energy Generation. And we are focused really on trying to build a network which has the community and the customer at the forefront, and think about how people are going to be encouraged to use the network and how we then develop that network to meet the customer's needs.
Excellent. What are some of the biggest challenges that you've faced to date?
Gosh, where do we start? There's probably three main areas we've kind of focused and kind of found a lot harder than we originally anticipated. The first one, unfortunately, will always start with power and the national grid network. So we're operating in a world today where not just us, but a lot of different sectors in the UK are trying to electrify. And we have a network which was built in the 1950s and really hasn't had a huge amount of investment. So network and power is problem one. Problem two has then been actually trying to get those connections and consents and planning in place. So the whole process is just very slow. And actually, I sometimes question, why am I getting planning permission on certain things? Because we're taking car park spaces and building a substation, which should just be normal permitted development type activity. And then the third area is everyone is confused. So I've worked in many industries and built new businesses in a number of sectors, but very often you tend to find private sector sort of get it, public sector are learning. Here, everyone is confused. It's a new sector, not helped by some of the language we use, where charges are ultra rapid, 50 kilowatts, 150 kilowatts. It's not a currency people can relate to. And then with the vehicles, people don't understand how the batteries work, how to charge, how, when they go to a terminal, what are they doing, how to pay, and so on and so on and so on. So this is a lot of work from us and other industry partners who are basically trying to debunk some of these myths as well.
You're entering a not too crowded market space, but still, there are still a number of other charging networks out there. So what differentiates B.EV from InstaVolt or GridServe, or I could go on?
Richard, wash your mouth out, please. Come on, we've only got to know each other. There are good networks out there. The interesting thing is, first of all, nobody has got enough capital today to cover the whole of the UK. So, there's so much more infrastructure which needs to go in. So there's a space for a whole host of very good charge point operators out there. But for us, the key thing which we're focused on as a business is how can we build a network with the end customer and that community in mind? Today we haven't got all the answers. And we built a member program. It's an open access network. We built a member program with 30,000 members. We're asking people, how do you charge? We're filming them when they're charging for the first time. We go and stand and just hover around the chargers while people are using them to observe what they're doing. We do surveys. We're asking questions. We're trying to build a network out, which actually is something which encourages further EV uptake, as opposed to people looking at the terminals where they're going to charge and going, oh my God, this looks too complicated. I'm off ski and I'm going to go and buy a hybrid, or even worse, something petrol related.
How many charging stations do you actually currently have?
So we've got from built, which we manage, and in construction, over 700. So there's a big network out there. In terms of live, we're just under 400 or 500 charge points. And actually, for us, this is not a numbers game. We've been very considered in the way we've been rolling this network out to look at where the demand is, and then be quite considerate on how much charging infrastructure you put in waves. So there's only circa 3% of vehicles out there on the road which are electric. So we're trying to match, and we do a lot of data analytics, and we have an AI tool which kind of tries to map how we build this demand out to match what actually is out there and how people are converting as well.
How do you actually plan to enlarge and scale your operations? Are you planning to stick in? Obviously, you started in Manchester. I don't know where some of your other charging stations are at the moment, but are you planning to look at rural locations in some of the sort of suburbs and things like that, or are you going to stick to very dense conurbations?
Well, we're covering Greater Manchester, and so what in one end we've got the Peak District, the other end we've got the countrysides around Ramsbottom and so on, and then in the middle we've got the Manchester city centre. So there's a real mix of from urban to rural already in the market where we started. Our network is now national, so I'm actually after this podcast jumping in a car heading down to Huntington, where we've got chargers going in at Dobby's, which are live, and we've got an event on Saturday. So we're building across the whole of the UK, and we're again looking at trying to connect up the network a bit. So if I'm out and I'm driving, we're trying to pick locations where we think people will go to, either a destination or on the go, and they'll be passing that particular site. So traffic is always a major factor for us.
Whilst I will wash my mouth out in a moment, are you guys actually getting together almost, I know it's not sort of an industry body, but other with other charging networks to actually promote charging as an infrastructure, or are you all just doing it all individually?
No, so we were one of the founding members of Charge UK. And we are working with other charge point operators, and we're as one voice into government and into the sector and into customer base and into car manufacturers and so on, really to look at how do we try and solve this problem as a unit. Each business is making their own business plan, so it's not, but actually it's useful to have a voice which, into policymakers in Number 10 or into Scotland or the regions, Wales or Northern Ireland, as well as the local authorities as well.
On the subject of all sort of banding together or coming together to lobby government, what's your opinion of the effectiveness of the Local Energy Vehicle Investment Fund?
Oh my gosh, where do we start? Good intentions is probably where I will start with that. And there have been predecessors to central government funding. The challenge really is they're trying to solve a problem which was existing in 2019, 2020, and this market's evolving at a rapid pace. So a lot of EV charging infrastructure has gone in, and a lot of it's gone in through private capital. Where that money should really be directed is into the hard to get areas where, and we've seen this in some of the areas. We worked with Trafford Council. We could not, for love nor money, find any power in a certain area. So that area hasn't got any charging. That's where that money should go, to help bring the power and help put the right infrastructure in place. But that isn't how it's been directed. And it's been sort of directed really to encourage a lot of gutter charging and lamppost charging and up to fast rapids. But a lot of councils are using it for the former.
Do you think, and I have to say, having spoken to Jeremy Hunt, the Chancellor, about this, I know it's not going to happen. However, do you think the fact that there's a massive disparity of the VAT percentage, 20% on destination charging and 5% on home charging, is actually also one of the driving forces that's dissuading people to actually, not go electric?
This is I'm going to be unpopular for saying this, but I actually think that yeah, we would love for it to be a level playing field. I just don't think that's the big decision maker when someone's deciding what their next vehicle's going to be. And fundamentally, as a country, we've got to remember that the excise duty will reduce, so government are going to look for an alternative route for funding. At this stage of the market, there should be encouragement on every front on every lever we can do. So to try and get people to move out of combustion engine vehicles into electric. So yeah, VAT should be level today, because if people perceive that as a problem. But there's lots of other things government should be doing to kind of encourage the market and the environment to make it more and more affordable and more attractive for people to convert. And that includes fleets. We shouldn't forget fleets in all of this as well.
Yeah, one of the common complaints of people using destination chargers as they go to X location, ZapMap or whatever tells them there's three chargers there. When they get there, two of them are actually out of order for various reasons or for whatever. How do you ensure that for your network that doesn't happen?
Well, that's why when we started our business, step one, I said to the team, we're not here to conquer the world. Let's just conquer Greater Manchester and let's get everything right. Let's make sure the network, we got the chargers in the ground, they're working at the right speeds. That's another factor we find is the speeds advertised don't match the speeds on actually what people are receiving. All the way through to we have a back office system which sends us a heartbeat every 15 minutes telling us how the charge is working. And our uptime has been very good. You know, we measure our uptime. We've been hitting 99 to 100% uptime on the network. And for me, it's no, the race isn't, let's put in lots and lots of chargers. The race is from a customer experience perspective, are customers happy with the network as we build it out? And a major thing which would get up my nose would be turning up and the bloody things are not working. So yes, that has to be and is such an important part of the way we're building this network.
Also, at the moment, quite a lot of the destination chargers are at motorway service stations, at random locations, etc. However, quite a few people, well, everybody, when going shopping and going to retail outlets, goes to the large car park at wherever it might be. However, usually, the charging stations at those large car parks is either tucked away in the corner with about four bays or actually not in the main car park at all. It's actually two or three streets away or whatever else. Do you think there needs to be a coming together of the various retailers to the actual landlords of the shopping centres and whatever else to actually get destination chargers at the actual car parks themselves? So if you're driving to the car park, you drive, park the car for 3 hours when you go shopping, and when you come out, you can almost have a 0 to 80% charge within that time, if not more, and off you go, off drive off with a full car.
Well, Richard, we have a vacancy for a business development director. And if you want to apply, I'm loving your strategy here because that's exactly how we're thinking. And we are put we have probably I'd say probably 50 to 60% of our future focus is in that retail park environment. Because let's make this part of people's lives. I want to go to Aldi, I'll park my car, get 15-minute charge, come back, and I've managed to get something out of the middle aisle, which always excites me. And I've also managed to get my shopping in as well, and my car's charged when I come back. The challenge has been the convoluted property system in the UK. It's so slow. I've never seen anything like it. So very often the landowner may well have the person renting the space, the store, doesn't necessarily own the car park. And then the person owning the car park may well have an infrastructure, a property investor who owns it, and so on. And that's where, you know, when I mentioned one of the problems we have is consent. Sometimes we can get the approval of the landowner in the car park, we just can't get the approval for running the power cable under the ground from the adjoining site, which isn't related. And so it becomes, so we end up with, I'd say probably we're still hitting about 50, 60, even up to 70% failure rate on really good sites, which everybody wants to put the power in. We either can't get the power, we can't get the consent to run the cables, or we can't get the freeholder to actually connect. And remember, a lot of the freeholds in the UK outside of London tend to be local authorities as well. So, you know, we talked about what can government do? Well, one of the things government could do very easily is open up all of the government land and say, we want to help, we want to build an infrastructure. We haven't got any money. Here's all our land. You pay us rent to be on our land, which is currently dead, earning us nothing, and bring the power to the land and create a new sustainable economy. And that would be a great way of solving this as well.
So, are you saying that from a planning perspective, EV chargers and the infrastructure and cabling, etc., required to do that is not treated in the same way that, say, a mobile phone mast and utility is? So, a mobile phone mast, effectively, unless you've got very, very good reasons, a mobile phone mast can't be turned down for planning reasons, and all the infrastructure around it can't be turned down. It's normally fast tracked by local government. Are you saying that that isn't the case with EV charging networks?
Yeah, and we've had it's worse than that. We've had circumstances where we have put in a planning application to a local authority, and we've been told that they're never going to acknowledge the planning application because they've got no staff. And to which I said, well, what does that mean? And the answer was, well, after 6 months, you could try and appeal it and then take them to court. I'm like, this is just too hard. I've got 100 million pounds to deliver. And there's most of the UK available. Why would I carry on with that local authority? I'm just going to ban. But I've already spent quite a bit of money because I've done the power searches, I've negotiated the contract with the landowner, and so on and so on and so on. So, and I've spent 6 to 9 months as well. So I've spent internal money. So yeah, the system is just overly complicated. I remember, and a lot of the network operators will not connect your substation to the grid if you haven't got the planning. And so therefore you can build everything and sit there waiting, and someone who's got a strip of land who's not, they're not refusing, they're just not engaging. It's just like, what are they going to get out of this engagement? It's just hassle, so they don't engage.
So your one abiding plea from this podcast, if Michael Gove is listening, is basically, Michael, bang people's heads together so we can actually speed up the process.
Yeah, there are two or three really simple property related activities, from planning through to permitted development rights and permitted access over getting grid connections and so on, which if they turn that switch the other way, it doesn't, I really don't understand how it affects either the environment or anything. It's all underground. No one can see it either. And we tend to be very careful about not spoiling someone's land if they're going to develop, putting a cable under there and trying to stop that and so on. But yeah, Mr. Go, come on. I'm more than happy to have a coffee and explain this in more detail.
Is also one of the answers, I suspect you're going to say no, but is one of the answers in some of the sort of more denser areas in London and Manchester, etc., to actually utilise the on street lampposts, to actually have charging points along a road where, I don't know, they say there's, I don't know, 20, 30 lampposts, each of them actually giving a little bit of charge to the cars plugged into them overnight.
It's for me, it's not the starting point, it's probably the ending point. So the experience for the customer, and you're a EV driver, Richard, receiving 3 kilowatts of power through a lamppost, if you can get to the lamppost and no one's parked something else in front of it, plus you've got trailing cables. So people with prams, just me, I'm clumsy. I'll trip over it at night and so on. So it's not the perfect solution. Even in denser environments, creating community hubs, whether it's at the local car park, which the council own, or encouraging the local supermarket where the council are the freeholder, and so on. And actually creating a mix of ultra rapid charging, where much like we did with our combustion engine vehicles, drive to somewhere, get a charge, fit something in around what you're doing. And then as a last choice, if there's really nowhere to go, or then lamppost charging, because as battery get bigger and the range gets longer, that 3 kilowatt charge, I'm just going to be surprised if people are even touching it in 5 years' time. And in the meantime, me, you, and everyone else as a taxpayer, we gave 1 billion pound to develop this network, which got hardly used and then got abandoned. And then it's quite unsightly, boxes on our lampposts as well. So I'm not knocking the sector, and there's a space for it. I just get a little bit upset when I see local authorities go for the numbers game to say, oh, I've installed 300 lamppost chargers. I've got the largest network in the UK. Who cares? You're the largest slow. You've got the slowest network in the UK. The reality is, you've got to work with the public. There's a lot of private capital out there wanting to work with local authorities. And what we find with these, and in particular, Levi is a good example. It's just frozen people. People councils don't want to do anything because they think they want to get a Levi grant. And there's a private capital out there that's going to help the mix of the public work in partnership and come up with a plan, which has got all of the mix of different types of charging. That for me is the best solution. And we've done that in Greater. I can give you examples in Greater Manchester where we've done that. And the bits we want to do, we've done, and competitors have done other bits. And it's one network which people love using.
Do you think local authorities, landowners with car parks, etc., nearby, so say a 5 minute walk from an urban environment, actually need to open up their car parks at night so people can actually park in the car park for free or on a tariff or whatever it might be, and actually have a batch of chargers? Ideally, to probably get to a point. Right, network grid on the side, and we'll talk about that in a second. But actually, to have pretty much every single space in this car park as a charging point, so people can actually park in the car park overnight as opposed to on the street outside the house. So you're only a 2 or 3 minute walk away, but park in the car park, whether it be a council or Sainsbury's or Tesco's or whatever it might be, and then actually, be gone by whenever the store opens, or the mass use of the store opens at, say, 9 o'clock in the morning, and actually be able to then you and others can put in proper infrastructure for 20, 30, 40 bays, if not more, and that can actually then be a reinvention and rethinking of overnight charging for people that don't have the ability to put a charger on the side of their house.
Richard, this is going to be that was the shortest job offer I've ever made to anyone. I'm rescinding what I said earlier on. It's a good idea in concept. There's a number of barriers to actually for it to work. One of the big ones is it's just not going to be today. There's not enough power to bring 20, 40 rapid, ultra rapids. You've got to look at human behavior. People don't really want to leave their car in 5, 10 minutes away. They want to really have it on there. We're used to having it on our street and so on. For me, it's a mixed economy. So we've put in, if you take our project in Tra with Trafford Council, they've opened up their council owned car parks, some in parks, some of those are in shopping areas, and they're open 24/7, and they currently charge a tariff for parking, and local residents come because we hover around the chargers, we meet them. And they come along, they charge, they're fiddling on their phones or catching up, or some of them are having a nap for 20 minutes, and then they go, or they go and get some, do a bit of shopping, grab a coffee. So people are fitting that in, but it's using the local authority land. What ideal situation, which goes back to the encouragement, should be that actually let's make all parking in local authority car parks where there's charging for EVs free. Let's get and the people will go, okay, well, I'll do that because I can see the benefits of it. That's such a small, minuscule value benefit, but a real psychological behavioral value. And then build it out from there. But yeah, no, we've got to come out with this blend we're trying to develop.
What advice would you actually give to individuals or businesses actually looking to invest in an EV infrastructure business similar to yourselves? Not that you want to give your rivals advice, but as you rightly said earlier, you're focusing on Manchester. Say you've got, somebody looking to do something like this in Surrey or Surbiton or wherever it might be. Where do you think they should be starting?
Well, we covered the UK. So we started
Oh, okay.
live in Greater Manchester. We covered the whole of the UK. My advice is, and unfortunately, as in every sector, you'll see over time a few firms will just fail. So, number one, this is very, very capital intensive. So you want to bring on board a really strong partner. We've got Octopus Energy Generation, who are keen in developing the network and also keen on working with you on that customer proposition. and developing that behavior piece. Secondly, this isn't easy, and it takes a lot longer from start of conversation to getting a rapid ultra rapid charger. It can take 12 to 18 months, and in that period you're burning through capital but not necessarily earning anything. And even when you get going, the usage is still quite low because the number of vehicles on the road. And then the third thing is, this isn't a numbers game. Everyone's really proud to say, I've got 1,000, I've got 2,000, and so on. For me, this is your network working, and are your customers coming back again and again to use your network? And if the answer to those two questions are no, don't start, really.
One of the common accusations from mainly non-EV drivers is the fact that whilst, yes, the car itself is electric, there's no tailpipe emissions, et cetera, the electricity going into it is actually generated via a dirty means, however that. How do you make sure that the actual energy or the electricity going into your charging network is actually either 100% renewable or as green as you can be?
Well, we spent a huge amount of time when we set up the business just focused on when someone says it's renewable, what does it mean? Oh, is it pellets being burnt, which have been shipped in from Canada, or is it really truly renewable? And so we buy our power from Octopus Energy, surprise, surprise. And actually, we've gone through this whole conversation. We're now having the next step conversation with them, which is, can we try and link our power to a wind farm or a solar farm, and say to people, this is actually where we're getting our power from on these particular days. And getting that, this goes back to the real belief of making sure, for me, that's your basic DNA. No one should be asking me, am I buying 100% renewable power in this sector? If you're not doing that, you should be shot.
Yeah, I completely agree. I completely agree. I think on that note, we wanted to shoot people. Asif, thank you very much for your time today and good luck.
Yeah, thank you, Rich. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
If you've liked this conversation with Asif today, please make sure to like and subscribe to where you get your podcasts.